Welcome to a live recording of the Mythmakers podcast, live on Clubhouse. It's Sunday night, and we don't usually say the date, but I think given the conversation we're about to have, it's relevant. It is Sunday, March 21st. I am Eben Matthews, and who else is here?
Hey, I'm Adam Martin.
Ricky Rukavina.
All right. And we, for those of you that don't know, are the co-founders of Macroverse. Macroverse is a company that is reinventing the digital comics landscape, amongst many other fun and exciting things, which, oh my goodness, we can't wait to talk more about, but we're not quite ready to talk more about. good reason to come into these rooms and listen to the podcast, because we will be talking about a lot of cool stuff over the next couple of months. But this episode is purely dedicated to a geek out session for the three of us. If anyone jumps into Clubhouse, into this room, they can certainly join in the conversation as well. But we are going to talk about the just released, we no longer call it the Snyder Cut, it's Zack Snyder's Justice League is now the official title. So I think maybe before we talk about our kind of hot takes on it, we have all seen all 4+ hours of it. Sounds like this will be an interesting conversation from the little bit that we have said to each other. I'm sure most people listening to this will know, but what's fascinating as backstory for the Snyder Cut is that there was a version of this movie that was released in theaters, how many years ago now?
2017, I believe.
2017, which was originally directed by Zack Snyder as well, but then handed over to Joss Whedon to finish. It became a radically different movie and did not do particularly well either in critical or fan response, nor certainly in comparison to the other superhero movies that had come out around the same time. Generally kind of not well received. And then there was a big fan outpouring of hashtags and essentially demand for this version of the movie, for the mythical Snyder Cut to be released and put out into the public sphere for people to see this incredible thing that was being withheld from us. I think very smartly, HBO, Warner Brothers, HBO Max saw that and, was looking for content to help to boost their fledgling streaming service. And especially in a pandemic year where there hasn't been a lot of production, thought, hey, we could spend some money on this and kind of give fans what they want and get something that, people will come and subscribe to HBO Max for. I suspect that plan will have worked wonderfully as those numbers come out. But that's a little bit of the backstory. Anything that I've missed or should add around any of that?
Think so. Obviously, a lot of controversies now swirling around Joss Whedon and his behavior while filming that. But I think that's not necessarily pertinent to the.
Yes. It is an interesting side note for sure. The Joss Whedon of it all, and the relative belovedness that people seem to express for Zack Snyder as a director and as a collaborator.
Yes.
Which is an interesting thing.
I'm kind of not paying attention to any of that usually because my mind and my focus are on so many other things. So
yep.
There's a lot of it I don't, know. I just kind of went into the movie fairly cold.
Okay.
Without a lot of hype about it. I just knew all I went into was, cool. There's something kind of new, big, cool out there. Of course I knew who Zack Snyder is. Of course I know Justice League. But any drama or any really, peripheral conversation I wasn't very aware of.
Okay, interesting. That will be interesting as we talk about our takes on the movie. So actually a little level setting probably is worth doing here too. So for that, Ricky, have you seen the other Zack Snyder DC movies?
I guess it depends on which ones. Which ones are his?
So he kicked off DC's this version of DC's slate with Man of Steel. So the first Henry Cavill appearance as Superman.
Yeah.
And then
I
went,
saw that. Really disliked it.
And then went
Then
went into Batman v Superman. Was the second one of his.
I saw that.
Yep.
Yeah, I saw that and really disliked that.
Yep.
That was one I was angry about.
That one holds.
You and I saw it together, as I recall.
Yeah, and that one does hold a special place in my heart as a movie that I hate. And then he is largely responsible. You got to give Patty Jenkins, of course, the credit for Wonder Woman, which I think is the best of the DC films thus far, but he did cast Gal Gadot and set the kind of tone for Wonder Woman, also as one of the producers on that movie. He's got his fingerprints on that, even though clearly Patty Jenkins deserves the lion's share of the credit there. And then Justice League was the one after that, and was planned initially as a epic. It was meant to be three separate films, and still two of those films have not been made. So despite this 4-hour version of Justice League that we've gotten, there were two parts of the story that he had planned that we will likely never see. There have been script leaks and stuff like that at this point, but there were a lot of things that were brewing in this version of the DC Cinematic Universe, which seemed like we will not go down that road at this point. Although after we talk about the film, it's interesting to kind of contemplate. So I'll just set this seed as something for the end of the conversation. But it's interesting to contemplate the shift to multiverse thinking that it looks like Marvel is doing, largely out of a creative creative desire. And I think DC is kind of doing because they have to, which is kind of interesting. If I'm reading between the lines there a little bit. So given that backstory for each of us, I don't hate Man of Steel as much. I have some really significant issues with it as a Superman fan. Some of my problems with Justice League actually come from the way that Man of Steel establishes that character. I don't hate that movie the way that some people do. I absolutely do not like Batman v Superman, and that to me felt like a huge misstep in trying to build a cohesive universe. Like, it really felt like it was driven at least by half, by DC trying to catch up to Marvel, as opposed to letting things kind of organically unspool. At least that was my take on it. But now bringing us to this film that we're here to talk about, I was surprised how much I liked it. And some of that, as Adam and I chatted very briefly about, was, going in with very low expectations. It's been a long time since I've seen the original theatrical release, so I'm very murky on what portions of it are overlap. But it felt like a completely different experience and a completely different movie to me, and one that I was really surprised how much I just enjoyed the experience of watching, even though, taking a step back from a kind of story plot, what's actually happening here standpoint, felt like there's some very messy bits. So what were each of your kind of initial thoughts, reactions as a starting point?
Ricky, I think Adam, you should get
there you go. Okay, so as a starting point, again, I don't have a lot of attachment to Zack Snyder or DC, or, you know, I just want to go in and see something that's great, and if not that, at least good. And I mean, the first hour is really confusing, and so much setup with a lot of things that honestly don't make a lot of sense, unless maybe you really need to know the worlds really well. I used to be much more a DC fan, and obviously, you know, thanks to Marvel, much more of a Marvel fan with how they've kind of treated their franchises and their brands. But, you know, I went into it just wanting something great, and for the first hour, and I was with a couple of people, we were just all talking, you know, there was just this, what is going on? Like, do you understand this? No, I don't understand anything. I don't know what this care. Okay, good. And then they got into, like, finally, you know, they got into some of the character backstory of, like, you know, Barry Allen, who I thought was the best and super fun, and would love to see way more on him. But when they started telling some of that, that was, like, fun. But just so much, it felt in many places kind of like a student film, and really, really just overwrought and overdone, and so, like, somebody just not telling somebody no, and it just felt like a mess. It felt like spaghetti, and that so many people could have taken parts of that and made a better movie out of it. But, and I want to say too, I think I watched 3 hours and 30 minutes, maybe 3 hours and 20 minutes, but there was finally, I was just like, you know what? I'm not giving this any more of my life or my time. I absolutely am miserable watching this. This has not been a fun experience. And I'm out. I still have lots to say. And it, you know what? Actually, I want to say this because I had a really big thought, which I think is just something I wouldn't normally think, but it just made me really dislike Warner Brothers movies. Many times I just thought during it is, do all of their movies have to look the same? Do they hire the same visual effects people over and over again? It looked like Lord of the Rings at one time. It looked like Harry Potter at another. It looked like, you know, Batman or Superman at another. It's like the same color correction, the same, you know, blue and fire visual effects. And even just the same costume design, and, you know, with the bad guy and the villain and his armor, and how, you know, the Aquaman guys look, which, by the way, I didn't see Aquaman because it just did not look very good to me. I don't know. Maybe I missed a massive gem in the world, but it sure didn't come off that way.
Not
like
really.
So
I think I watched on an airplane. Half of it on an airplane was that one. So it's at that level for me.
I left thinking I don't want to see DC movies again. I don't want to give them a chance. I don't want to go and, like, I'm going to thoroughly vet it, which I didn't on this one. And who knows? Maybe you know, all of the reviews would have, you know, turned me to see it anyways. Because it sounds like there are a lot of people that really love it, but I'm not one of them.
Awesome.
Yes. Fair enough. I think it would be very much pushy to say that I really loved it. I think, and this is where you have to aim off, right? Because I'm not quite sure how, given how low my expectations were based on kind of all of the DC films apart from Wonder Woman have been. That I think actually I enjoyed it. I think I enjoyed it far more than I might have done if I had just gone into it cold. You know, and I think to your point of like the first hour or whatever being a mess, it is. I think it also makes them, not really the mistake, I suppose, given who this is for, but it does, it is entirely reliant on the idea that you have seen every single one of the other films.
100%.
And therefore know exactly what's going on. There is no attempt.
Isn't it enough to be put through Superman and then put through Batman versus Superman? And you've seen Wonder Woman. I mean, literally, do I have to see Aquaman, which I heard was kind of crappy?
Well, no, and I mean, you shouldn't. Actually, what's
terrible as well.
Well, that's what's interesting, because you don't need Aquaman or really Wonder Woman. Like, this picks up right after Batman v Superman. So it's really Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Justice League that have any sort of threads of the story, as far as, like, I mean, you don't need what happened in Aquaman. In fact, Aquaman happens after Justice League as far as the timeline,
yep.
And Wonder Woman does happen before, but it's really just backstory for this. It's not, it doesn't feed into the whole Darkseid apocalypse thing.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, this is not Ulysses, you know, this is not James Joyce that I should have. If I saw those movies, do I really have to wait over an hour to feel like, do I know, like, okay, I literally felt like there was 10 movies that I missed seeing, because obviously I started from the beginning, but I really did not know what the hell was going on for at least an hour, which is that's a long time to I have to pay super close attention, be really involved and invested. And even then, I feel like it didn't even matter. Like, they could have cut that and just started with Barry Allen backstory and some expository here and, you know, a couple things on the three blocks, and I'd be good. Like, okay, I'm ready. Let's go. That's good.
So that's funny. See, to me, then, in that way, I loathe Ulysses with a vengeance. And so in that way, I feel like actually Ulysses is a perfect analogy for it. It makes no sense whatsoever. but I think probably Zach reacting to a lot of the criticism from the cinematic, the previous cut, was that there was no attempt at any backstory. It was too much dropped into the middle of this thing. Every attempt at history was so kind of circumspect that it was just irritating.
Oh, you just didn't care about anyone.
And then you're meant to care about these other people. Yeah. Exactly. Then you'll come. Now you have to. You're supposed to care what happens to these people that you know nothing about.
Is it supposed to be like? And I never know how to pronounce this. The Silmarillion.
The Silmarillion.
I tried to get through that many, many times.
Well, that's terrible as well. Yes.
Okay, I was going to say, I'm sure it's a masterpiece, but are we really? You know, I don't think I can compare Justice League to Lord of the Rings. Or J.R.R. Tolkien.
Well, no.
Do I want to get that, you know? Because these historical wars that I just, maybe in the last 30 minutes they tied it up and, like, thank God I watched that hour, but I'm just glad I got sleep instead.
I'm not sure the last hour contributed. The last hour actually made quite a lot of things just even more confusing, with some quite convenient bits and pieces. But it was also quite spectacular. I mean, I think what is irritating, of course, is the last hour. Like, I think it's fundamentally an issue when you have, you know, you had Chris Nolan in charge of the initial Batman trilogy. So you have this true kind of storyteller running this thing. And that comes through with some issues. Obviously, his third act's going to fall apart. But you know, he's a true visionary storyteller. Zack Snyder is a visual stylist, but not necessarily the greatest storyteller when you needed both of those things. So the only thing you may have missed out on is actually some pretty kind of fantastic action, just done by someone who knows how to shoot action. But I think that's about it.
I got enough of that for the first hour. That's for sure. A lot of action.
You did.
I was just gonna say, I reminded him sitting in Superman when he just like keeps decimating block after block after block block.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I just thought, is this gonna end? I felt like I'm curious. Somebody must have done a YouTube video on how long it was, but it felt like 30 minutes of just like action and blocking. You know, after like the first couple of minutes is cool, but then 27 minutes more, you just don't need.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, I think that so I have a slightly different take on all of it, and I think you can absolutely judge it just by what it is without any of the context. And I think, you know, from that point of view, like, you know, trying to put myself into the shoes of someone that doesn't really know the comics or the mythology, hasn't seen the other movies, then I would imagine that is a radically different and less interesting experience.
Yes.
For sure. So it's interesting. I mean, actually, you know, Ricky, you haven't seen WandaVision yet, but when you do get around to seeing WandaVision, I think WandaVision does the same thing on a certain level, which is there's a lot of expectation that you are on the Marvel train. And without that backstory, without knowing Infinity War, without knowing kind of the last 10 years of Marvel movies, I'm not sure that WandaVision would have the impact that it does for a casual viewer. Well, I think they are banking on...
Definitely would not have.
Would definitely yeah, not, definitely yeah. I mean, they're really yeah. banking on, like, I'm invested in these characters, I'm invested in this universe... however, I think what Marvel does so well is, you know, with minor exceptions, you know, their movies tend to be really fun and really well paced and really, you know, well crafted in a way that, you know, even with a slower start to something like WandaVision, I felt very satisfied by the ride and by the payoff to all of that. But I think it's interesting that, you know, especially in Marvel and DC land, they are... It feels like, you know, taking intentional liberty with the notion that these things have permeated pop culture to enough of a degree that we can kind of expect the audience for this to have that fundamental knowledge or to go get that fundamental knowledge, which is interesting. I don't think we've been in a time where that's been the case in the same way at all.
I think that's an interesting notion, but I don't feel like that first hour of setup was fundamental knowledge or anything like close to it. Like,
I'm not saying that it works, but I do think that you know, whether or not it could have been cut in places or we needed some of those beats, which I think we probably didn't. But I think you're still coming into a story that's already in the middle of the story.
It's in motion.
It's like starting
Harry Potter at Order of the Phoenix.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So it's not that they, you know, couldn't have done it better. I think there is just an assumption that you're coming into this with a certain amount of working knowledge. And I will say, like, it's been years since I've seen Batman v Superman, and I had forgotten that all that like dark side mother box Kryptonian ship stuff was in there, so I was kind of piecing that together in places of going like, oh yeah, I guess that was introduced there, because some of the things that are in Justice League, you know, did feel kind of like, when would they have talked about this? And then kind of half remembering like, oh yeah, like that was weirdly shoved into Batman v Superman to set this up. So like the whole kind of dark side coming and the parademon nightmare that Batman had and the Barry Allen moment of him coming and saying like, you got to get the team together to ward this off. Like that's all in Batman v Superman. Now all that setup is in there.
Yeah, I had totally forgotten the Flash appearing in Batman's dream, but not his dream.
I mean, this really is a continuation of, you know, Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Justice League. It's like this is kind of the next in line in that one single story in some ways. I think that, you know, what's interesting, and this is where I, you know, I think feel a little bit differently, is like, I'm actually, like, I would agree that Zach as a filmmaker has not proven to be an exceptional storyteller in the way that someone like Chris Nolan is, or, you know, other people that we really just are riveted, you know, I mean, even on television, you know, with some of, you know, the shows that I know we all do really love, or at least, you know, I mean, I know at least Ricky and I know we really love, you know, Breaking Bad. I don't think you've seen it yet, all the way through.
Breaking Bad is not one I can wrap my head around.
Which is so weird.
Weird way. So weird.
So, you know, our Venn diagram is strong, but there are some places, there are some corners. But, you know, I think what I go, and maybe I give, you know, some goodwill here too, because like, I love Dawn of the Dead. Like, I absolutely love Dawn of the Dead, and like, that movie works for me on every level. I love 300. Like, you know, Adam and I saw that together, and I remember coming out going like, holy crap, like, what was that? I've never seen anything like that. Like, that whole, like, you know, ramp up, slow motion, kind of stylized thing that he developed for that movie was mind-blowing to me. Like, you know, and I think part of it for me is, like, I think of just about anyone on the planet, like, I think he brings comics to life. Like, that, you know, was what worked so well to me for 300, is like, there is a, like, this is the book in realized in live action in a way that I don't think anybody does as well, just from a purely visual standpoint. And I thought there are moments in Justice League that had that feeling for me. There are moments in Batman v Superman that have that feeling to me, just purely the visual, you know, kind of impact of that kind of stylized approach. And I agree with you on some level, Ricky, that like, there's a certain kind of look and feel. I don't actually associate that with DC as much as I do with him. Like, I think he has settled into a particular visual style that is pretty recognizable. It'll be really interesting when he goes and does these kind of new zombie movies at Netflix and kind of the next, you know, things, if that's still the style or if he tries to do something different. One thing that I will not give Zach any credit for at all is character costume design. As I think there's a certain aesthetic to all of those characters, which 99% of does not work for me. I think Batman looks amazing because it's just the Dark Knight. And then pretty much every other character, Wonder Woman looks great too, I will say, but pretty much every other character, from some of the weird flourishes on Superman's costume to the very bizarre kind of construction of Cyborg, to I think the worst Flash costume that looks like a very inexperienced cosplayer put together with duct tape. Those things I have a real hard time wrapping my head around or forgiving on any level. I don't get it. Like, I don't get how that's the look of these characters, you know, in something that's meant to be as epic as this. I also, you know, really did not think that the pseudo Lord of the Rings sequence, you know, felt like anything other than a pseudo Lord of the Rings sequence, which I did also find quite odd. But I thought that the first time around as well.
Oh, yes. You mean the flashback when they're attacking Darkseid?
Yeah, which is in like, yes, you know, pitch perfect, you know, Lord of the Rings flashback, you know, Battle of the Five Armies, you know, kind of thing. Like, almost exactly the same. So, you know, I do think there are some weird choices in there. I hate the look of the Martian Manhunter, which, Ricky, you probably missed at the very end. Also thought that was a very
another kind of thing I missed that I would have hated.
Yeah,
I got to not hate something.
The epilogue. I did really like little touches. You know, this is the fanboy in me, but like, you know, the little touch of the Green Lanterns, you know, in there in a couple places, you know, I thought was really fun. And then I think, you know, fundamentally, this has always been DC's challenge. And so, you know, you can lay a lot of the blame of this, you know, whether you liked it or didn't like it. So positive or negative blame on Zack Snyder or the people that he worked with on these films. But it's always DC's challenge, and it's always been the reason that Batman has largely been the character that's been the most successful franchise for them. That these are hard characters to crack. They're really hard characters to depict as people because they're fundamentally not people. And that's always been the distinction between Marvel and DC, is that Marvel characters are people with problems that happen to have superpowers, and they have to deal with those superpowers as part of managing their lives. DC characters are fundamentally gods. And it's a weird thing to try to crack from a character perspective. You know, Batman works because he's a guy. He's someone we can relate to. Like, you know, one of the lines I do like in both versions of the movie is, you know, "What's your superpower? I'm rich." You know, I think that's actually a pretty good line. But he's the character that kind of feels like he should be a Marvel character. But Superman is fundamentally a god. You know, Wonder Woman is literally half god. You know, Aquaman is half god. Like, these are literally, you know, immortal, supreme style beings that walk amongst men. They aren't us. And so that's hard, you know, I think from a storytelling standpoint, to find a way to humanize those characters that has this sort of mythic, you know, quality, but still brings them down to human scale. And I think that's what Wonder Woman did, you know, quite well. But now it's like, you know, even there, like, I hated Wonder Woman 1984 for the most part. And
didn't see it.
Yeah, you don't need to.
You
absolutely don't need to.
You'll
definitely regret it, especially with a good taste of the first movie in your mouth. And, you know, I think it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what they do going forward. Where, you know, you have so now, to kind of bring it around to this multiverse concept, you know, they have to somehow take these movies that, you know, love them or hate them, that Zack Snyder made, and those are still canon on some level because you've got a billion-dollar Aquaman movie starring the same actor that ties into those storylines. You've got a billion-dollar Wonder Woman franchise which ties into those storylines. You've got Shazam, which was not terrible, but not great, which lives in that same universe. You've got the one that I am looking forward to, the James Gunn Suicide Squad coming out next year, which has relationship back to the first version of the Suicide Squad. So these all live in the same universe, but they also have to now find a way forward to build these franchises anew with, you know, ideally a different point of view. And part of what's very heavily rumored for that is that they're embracing this multiverse concept where, you know, potentially or theoretically, we're going to actually get a movie that has Michael Keaton as Batman coexisting, yes, with, you know, probably Robert Pattinson's Batman and Ben Affleck's Batman and... you know, I don't know, can we get George Clooney in there as well, just to, to round it out?
Oh God.
But, you know, we're theoretically getting this kind of multiverse.
Yeah, Val Kilmer as well.
Yeah, Val Kilmer as well. But we're getting this multiverse concept to, you know, kind of say, hey, we can do all these different versions of these characters, you know, more like the comics, and there's this kind of weird shared continuity that can splinter off into these different storylines. And then I think, you know, we're going that way with Marvel as well, with the huge success of Into the Spider-Verse, kind of proving that audiences are capable of kind of going with that at this point. Like, okay, like, we get that there's a bunch of different versions of these characters, and they, you know, why not put them together in the same movie, and that can actually work. And so, you know, the big rumor is that in the next Spider-Man movie, we're going to get Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield in a kind of interdimensional crossover, and that's probably all gonna go culminate in the next Doctor Strange movie, which is literally called The Multiverse of Madness. So I think that's where we're headed.
Works.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it works because there's good stories, right? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the idea that DC is having a multiverse, to me it sounds like I want a multiverse to have a multiverse.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to, you know, like, it's, to me it's, you know, interesting that they don't kind of see what's right in front of them, which is, you know what, nobody wants to see more Superman and Batman movies, in my opinion. Like, obviously there's a market for it, they're able to kind of, you know, trick people into seeing stuff, right? I got tricked last night. I got tricked into seeing and you know what, good on them. They totally, like, you know, good for them that they tricked me into giving them some of my time. But I'm gonna be, it's a trick that backfires, right, to a certain extent. And I think what people want to see are, I want to see, you know, they want to see Joker. They want to see, I want to see a Lex Luthor movie. I want to see a Commissioner Gordon movie. I want to see a Robin movie. I want to see things that are on the fringe because they've beaten these stories to death. So I don't need to see 10 Batmans living in the same world together because I've already seen all that stuff. I want to see new stories told well. And yeah, of course, I'll see, I mean, Spider-Man, you know, the latest incarnations. I didn't love the Tobey Maguire, Sam Raimi stuff. I love the new ones.
Yeah.
With, I'm forgetting his name off the top of my head. Such an easy name. Everybody knows who he is. It'll come to me. But the new Spider-Mans and Into the Spider-Verse, those are amazing stories.
Yep.
And they have reason to exist versus, you know, I think Justice League, the reason it exists is because we're in a pandemic and people need something to watch, and 4 hours is not a bad thing to ask people to, you know, give up their time either in a full night or a couple of nights. I mean, it's literally split into, I mean, I think I was up to like,
it's a TV approach, 18
parts. Yeah.
18 parts. How long it was. But, you know, but DC, they have not been able to embrace, I think, the risk of a Joker, which I think was financed outside the studio for the most part because of the risk associated with that, or the risk of taking on, and I'm sure, I don't even know, like, look, I'm not in the know like you guys are on this stuff, but I'd be surprised if a Lex Luthor movie was not in the works in some sort of shape or form. Maybe there's already a trailer. That's how much I don't know about. Fun. That's, and I don't want to see Superman in it. I want to see him like in sidelines. You know, he's there every now and then. I don't need to see Superman and, you know, the incarnation. I want to see a badass villain that maybe has, you know, who is human and has superhero problems. That's the movie I want to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, those are some of the, you know, if we go to the source material, I mean, those are some of the Superman comic stories that work the best, is it's, you know, the reason that Lex Luthor, I think, is such a good villain for Superman as depicted in some of those best series, is that you are putting kind of essentially unstoppable power versus someone who's just, you know, much smarter. And so you kind of get to play both sides of that coin of like, yeah, you can, you know, punch through the world, but you can't keep up with the brain power that's happening over here, or the seeing ahead, or the, you know, the four-dimensional chess game. And you know, I think what's interesting in some of that stuff is that Lex Luthor is often portrayed as, you know, he would have been kind of a Tony Stark had it not been for Superman, and that the arrival of Superman on planet Earth has made him so concerned about the fact that there is this sort of all-powerful being here that he's essentially become a villain only to make sure that someone can stop this guy.
Yeah.
Much more interesting.
Oh, you know, and as you're talking about that, what sounds cool to me is, you know what, actually make Lex Luthor a good guy and an incarnation of Superman as a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like play around with that kind of stuff. That sounds fun and fresh and interesting and immediately makes me think, I want to go see that as opposed to, you know, I guess my one-line review would be a four-hour music video with music that's not very good.
That's a good review. It's a good review. That's funny. So I'm guessing that, Ricky, you are not going to be lining up for the soon-to-be-released black and white version of Justice League, which will be hitting HBO Max in the next...
That's not a real... That's not a real thing.
That is absolutely a real thing, yeah.
wait, what?
That is hilarious. I actually had
this talking about that. Like black and white, like Citizen Kane?
Yeah.
Black and white?
Yeah, it's called Justice is Gray. And it's the Snyder Cut remastered as a film noir.
My God. I'm sorry.
That is amazing.
This is good to get a reaction from somebody like me who has no idea. That sounds like a April Fool's joke to me. Like, and the fact that it's real, I mean this, I already thought that this was like, it felt like a indulgent movie. That is indulgent. That's indulgent. A black and white.
This doesn't feel like an indulgent movie.
It's an incredibly indulgent movie.
Level. So black and white does take it to another level. Well, it worked for David Fincher and Mank, so it'll be fine, right? It's the same thing.
I don't know if it really works in Mank, but that's a whole other podcast live.
Oh, no, I was actually being slightly sarcastic there. I think the shooting in black and white worked. I think the film did not overall.
Yeah.
But yes.
That's a film that I couldn't... It's funny. I don't have any problem admitting this. I just couldn't finish it. I just couldn't watch it. I was like, after a while... And it wasn't... There was nothing bad about it. I love David Fincher so much. I love so much of his stuff. And I love Citizen Kane... I've read so many books on the making of it. I'm like pretty familiar with the ups and downs and a lot of the historical facts and things that Orson Welles went through. And of course, I was excited to sort of see it, but it really just felt like a real slog. And that's not what I wanted to remember or think about and have my own interpretation of Citizen Kane tainted by, you know?
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah.
So black and white, man, not only will I not be online, I will definitely do everything I can to avoid that's so indulgent. It feels selfish.
Well, I knew, I mean, what's...
people to spend their money. It's hard-earned money.
What's even funnier to me about that is... I knew he was putting out a black and white version. I assumed like, oh, it's a special feature, like on the DVD, you know, like if you bought the Blu-ray, like here's the special, you know, commentary or whatever version of it. So I was like actually looking on HBO Max last night after I finished watching it, going like, I'm kind of curious what this looks like. I was just gonna like pull up a couple scenes. And it wasn't there, so I went online and looked, and they're like, oh no, he's still working on it. Like, there's still finishing touches being made to the black and white version, so that gets released as a whole separate thing in a couple weeks.
That is hilarious.
I can't believe that's real. Yep. I really thought you were joking when you first mentioned it. That's insane.
No, it's absolutely real. And then the other thing, and actually, Adam, maybe you'll have something to say about this, but it did, I was really surprised, and it did take me a, you know, half hour to get over the 4:3 aspect ratio. I think that's because it shot for IMAX. That was the only thing I could put together in my head.
Exactly why.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Because like great, but so weird, like watching it at home on HBO to have this, what felt like, you know, this meant to be epic film experience in what felt like a TV, old TV aspect ratio.
I have a very funny story about this. Oh my gosh, you guys are gonna love this. So the friend's house that I went to, he has, you know, kind of a cool home theater setup, and and it's kind of new. So when we first started, he's like, "Yeah, you know, I can't figure out how to get this to the right ratio," and then he paused it and he couldn't do it again. And I just remember thinking, this kind of blows that I have to watch this in this epic movie in 4:3.
Yeah.
And I literally didn't know until you just said it that, no, that's just like an April Fool's joke. I'm going to release this 4-hour epic movie, and I'm going to just, and by the way, I can't even imagine how you go into a Warner Brothers executive, you know, office and say, we're going to release this 4-hour thing, totally epic, amazing visual effects. It's going to be in, you know, 1933 aspect ratio of 4:3. And then also I'm going to do a black and white version of it for everybody a couple of weeks later or whatever that's coming up. That's insane.
Yeah, for only $70 million, can you please just go ahead and write that check, please? Yeah.
Yes. Now, was that what they spent on this?
That's what's been reported, $70 million, yeah. For,
oh wow! I thought they'd spent like 20. Oh,
yeah, the when they first announced it, they said about $20 million, but then it ended up, has now been reported that it's been 70, because yeah, they basically redid just about every special effect. And you know, I will give credit for the pretty seamless mustache removal in this version, comparatively, especially, which. Oh God! And the original release was just like so cringeworthy, but I was watching closely and couldn't see much in the way of the CG Henry Cavill lip.
that's about the mustache, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah,
I did read something about that.
Yeah,
that's funny.
No, I thought this was pretty seamless in that regard, where the theatrical release was just unbelievably bad.
It was spectacular. Yes.
Yeah.
What it did? Is there a reason that it was 4:3? Did he have like a?
Yeah, so I did
they
go.
Did actually have a. There was actually a thing. It's very funny.
There's a disclaimer at the very beginning. Yeah.
There is the thing at the beginning saying this: the aspect ratio is intentional. However, it is, you know, fairly fleeting. But
it says,
is there.
Yeah, no, there's a. It says at the beginning, this is preserved. I think they use the term like preserved in its original 4:3 aspect ratio to. Deliver the full, you know, to completely deliver Zack Snyder's vision or something like that. So, I mean, definitely a play to the fans that got this, you know, made in the first place. But, I mean, I'm all for, like, giving him the opportunity to realize his vision given all this context, but I did find that particularly weird. Like, just, you
well,
know.
It's also, I don't know, if he, I actually know, in his defense on that one, yes, it's weird. And if he shot it for, basically, I didn't realize IMAX was 4:3, I thought it was slightly wider, but if he shot it for that in the first place, then absolutely, like, if you're doing the movie, keep that ratio, because what you're not then doing is reframing everything and reframing everything for a 2:35, you know. So I actually, it's funny because it kind of bugged me, especially the TV we've got here is a little older, and so it's like it was kind of floating in the middle of the screen in a slightly distracting way.
Mm-hmm.
And we did then see, which will be, I'll talk about it later, but we saw Nomadland last night, which was in anamorphic aspect ratio. And it's like, oh, thank God, there's actually a film that looks right. You know? But so, no, I didn't have that much of a problem with that, I think, given that that was the intent in the first place.
Yeah.
You know?
I ultimately, it disappeared for me at some point, but it did take me, it took about 30 minutes for me to be like, okay, I'm just along for the ride now.
Yeah, I mean, it did disappear, but I just found, I honestly, the whole entire time, just, you know, or not the whole entire time, but for at least the half of the time that I would actually watched it, I was thinking, you know, this sucks. Like, I feel like I'm missing some the edges, and I was actually looking at the composition to see like if anything got cropped out, you know, because I literally thought it was my friend's fault and his crappy setup. But it wasn't. It's Zach's fault.
Yep, not your friend's fault. Not your friend's fault. The auteur's work in all its glory. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So.
Well, I hope there we go. I'm just gonna tell you both now that if you do Justice League Edition black and white or whatever it's called podcast live, I will not be there.
I won't watch the whole thing in black and white. I am curious enough to check out a few scenes just to see what it looks like.
I'll just Photoshop it for you. I'll show you what it looks like.
Well, that's what actually has me curious, which might just be a clever marketing ploy. But, you know, it's like if it was just like, oh, we just turned it black and white and adjusted the contrast. Like, you know, we've seen that done before. There are episodes when they put out the first season of The Walking Dead on DVD. There's, you know, they did a handful of episodes in black and white as kind of an homage to the black and white comic series. And that was clearly just like, you know, you desaturate it and you adjust the contrast and there you go. So I am curious if there is actual kind of changes to the cinematography that they're doing in post, like that necessitates an additional 2 weeks of post, to do that. So I'm curious to watch a few scenes, but definitely don't see why.
Yeah, it could just be rendering time.
It could be. I mean, absolutely could be. But I will say, you know, the one thing that I think looks really interesting coming up in the DC slate is the Suicide Squad, and just, you know, given how phenomenal all of James Gunn's Marvel efforts have been, I'll be looking forward to seeing what he does with, as you were saying, Ricky, a bunch of characters that most people don't even know exist from the DC canon.
Yes.
I love that. That's my favorite. When they do, when stuff like that happens, I think it's just creative. It's freeing. It's super cool.
I do have, you know, for anyone from Warner Brothers that ends up listening to this, I do have one pitch for a Superman movie, and this is one that I've had for a long time. But I have always wanted a Superman movie that's not so much about Superman, but it's really about the investigative journalism that he and Lois have to do at the Daily Planet. So make it a newsroom mystery that happens to have Superman in it. That's been my take.
That's funny.
I like that idea. That's super cool. Mm-hmm. See, that's the kind of thing I want to see. I don't want to see the Silmarillion or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, you'll get that too on Amazon, of course. So, yes. You know, you'll have your chance there as well.
Yeah. I also got to say, Zach's version of superheroes are much more brutal than most of the rest of ours.
It's true. That was actually one of the things I liked. One of the very few things I liked about the underwater fight.
Yeah.
Was the splashing people and like the trails of blood.
Yeah.
The water.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's actually quite cool. I like that.
Yeah. There were some moments. There were definitely some moments. It did take me aback, you know, kind of the way that people reacted to Superman breaking Zod's neck, which I'm not a huge fan of either. But, you know, when they have I actually quite liked the Wonder Woman introduction in this version, much more so than the previous, of course. But the fact that she ends the fight by blowing up the building that she's there to stop them from blowing up. Is like, really
infuriating.
Absolutely
infuriating, especially when she's just blocked all his bullets
right.
and moves at the speed of sound.
Exactly.
Like, you couldn't move across the room and throw him out of a window.
Yeah.
No, you gotta blow up a grade 3 listed building in the middle of London.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. It's just, as a Brit, that's so offensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, there's a lot of wanton property destruction from all these guys.
That's funny.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that we've each got a take that are mostly aligned, I would say, on Justice League to various degrees. I do not think it's a good movie. I think, of the three of us, I enjoyed it the most. Like, I did watch 3 hours straight last night and never felt bored, never felt like I didn't want to be watching it, while at the same time going, why are they saying that, or why does that look like that? But I did find myself quite willing to go along for the ride. Any screenwriters out there, never call something the Unity, as the thing that's going to happen and end the world. That's just not good. I've got to get inside the Unity. Also, very convenient to just be able to backtrack through time to just fix everything, and couldn't do that to begin with. But, you know.
Well, and does it when he's been doing, like, he's been racing in circles around the town,
yeah,
to get up to enough speed to push him in.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then, and like, he runs the 100 and under in, like, less, in, you know, minus 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Shoves him in. I was like, you've got to have internal logic even with gods,
yes,
running around.
Lots of convenient story plotting. So, yeah, I mean, there's a whole different, like, deconstruction of the actual story and plot here, which I think mostly all falls apart. But,
yes.
But that's pretty par for the course in these movies.
Yeah.
So.
No, exactly.
Anyhow, awesome. Well, Adam, what in the world is a hoojama flip?
Yeah, so your hoojama flip is just whatever is top of mind at the moment that we can't quite remember the name of. So yeah, you know, whatever one is kind of lurking around in the back of one's head, you can't quite put a finger on. So yes. What, Evan, do you want to start us off? What is your hoojama flip of the week?
I'm thinking, I would say Falcon and the Winter Soldier, but I'm not supposed to have more than one, so, I won't say that. Ha ha ha. Instead, I'll shout out a podcast I've been listening to. This is the latest, Q-Code, narrative podcast. It's called Unwanted, and it's a lot of fun. So if you've ever listened to any of the shows that Q-Code has done, they're all, you know, very well produced, you know, kind of in the spirit of this, you know, kind of thing that's happened over the past few years, where their narrative audio dramas, you know, some of which we've made and which we talked about directing for last week. You know, I think Q-Code does it just as well as anybody, and as consistently at a high level as anyone out there right now. I think I've really enjoyed every one of their shows. But what's really fun about this latest is that it's kind of a crime thriller, and they've had elements of that before, but the two main characters have genuinely, like, just very appealing performances and a good amount of comedy, which is not something that I've seen a lot of in these sorts of shows and these sorts of audio dramas. So it still has kind of a thriller crime element, which we know, you know, it seems to be one of the genres that performs the best in this category. But there's a good amount of just banter and fun kind of back and forth between these two lead characters. And it's, you know, it's got a really enjoyable kind of buddy, they're not cops, but it's kind of got a buddy cop kind of vibe to it, which is a lot of fun. So, for anyone looking for some additional audio distraction, I would recommend that one.
Nice. Ricky, what about you?
So what I have been watching is something called Lupin, which is on Netflix.
Yeah.
And have either of you guys seen that yet?
I haven't seen it. I've heard nothing but good things about that.
It's really good. It's about, you know, this the character's Arsène Lupin. He's the gentleman thief, and he's kind of like a cross between James Bond and, I don't know, somebody else. Yeah, he's like a smooth criminal. Okay, so James Bond and Michael Jackson? I don't know.
There we go.
but it's French, and with it's got subtitles, it's got dubbing, and it's only 5 parts, but it's been great. Really, really like it. It's really interesting, kind of cool setups. It's fun, and it's been just kind of a nice deviation from other stuff. So really like it. I recommend checking it out.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I've been hearing nothing but good things. I tried to watch the first episode and then realized that it was subtitled, and because so much of what I watch is happening while I'm doing something else, like I have to really take time to watch things that have subtitles, and it's one of my frustrations. I've got like 10 things that are all kind of foreign shows from produced in other countries that I really want to watch but haven't dedicated that time to watching them because of that.
I, funnily enough, watched this with the dubbing, and I switched it for a little bit to subtitles, and I was like, you know, I kind of like the dubbing voices. I'm just going to go with it. I did the same thing with Money Heist, I think.
Maybe I'll give that a shot, because I, for some reason, like, I bristle at that for some reason. There have been a couple of Netflix shows that I've wanted to watch and have tried the performances, and I know like they go out of their way to try to get good performances, and they just never quite work for me. But I guess if it's a choice of like not ever getting to it or doing it that way, maybe doing it that way is better.
Yeah,
it's. It's probably, I'd go that way. It's not ideal, and it's not perfect at all by any stretch of the imagination. They didn't like do the Oscar winning job of dubbing this at all, it's, you know, especially if you're kind of, it's probably perfect for you, because if you're working and doing things, you won't notice it as much when it's really not so great.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
awesome.
No dubbing ever anywhere. It is a crime. Absolutely not. No, never, no. my son has become a huge anime fan, and there's a controversy within the anime world about the dub versus subtitle versions. And to my delight, he is fully on the side of the subtitle.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
which makes me very happy. Seven Samurai kind of remains my favorite film, and I think I saw kind of 10 minutes of a dubbed version once when I was quite young, and I was just horrified. So yeah,
that sounds terrible.
That's like mentally scarring.
Yeah.
Oh no, it did. Yeah. Well, hence the very visceral reaction against the dubbing. I think it's it worked.
Where do you?
It's so funny with Lupin. I didn't think it was as good as the hype. It was very slick. It's very enjoyable. And I thought I got the pilot I thoroughly enjoyed, and I was like, oh, this is actually kind of a mess. Structurally. Like again, very convenient, lots of convenient leaps in this logic and how he moved. I don't know, it just kind of, I wasn't as impressed by it as I felt I should have been, in a funny way.
Well, you know, I will say, it's kind of how we started this conversation. I didn't really know anything about it, just like I didn't really know anything about Justice League. And going in, I like going in with as little knowledge as possible. And for this one, I was just kind of caught by surprise that I liked it so much. I think if it was hyped up for me,
I thought it was very. It's Louis Leterrier directed the pilot, at least. I don't know if he did the other ones as well, but he is. I mean, as a director, my God, he knows how to construct a scene and to show. He's a beautiful director to watch. And so, and the performances were good. There's lots of good stuff about it. It was just somehow less than the sum of its parts overall, in a weird way. And then I think for me, sorry, my Hujima flip is Nomadland that I mentioned earlier. So last night, as a kind of antidote to Justice League, we watched Nomadland on Hulu. And it's stunningly good, and it's just kind of deeply melancholy, but it's beautiful and quiet, and it's locked into just Frances McDormand by herself, just kind of going through this existence, this kind of bizarre existence, and it's stunningly beautiful, well worth the time.
You know
great.
What?
Just great.
Yeah, I definitely want to see that too. I actually have to change mine. I do recommend that podcast, but I completely forgot the other movie that I watched this week is called The Sound of Metal. And it's,
I loved it.
Oh
I
my
loved it.
God, it was so good. It's probably the best movie I've seen this year, but it felt like the just best movie I've seen in a couple of years at least. Just pitch perfect in every way and such an interesting story.
Exciting.
Like just, you know, everything I want from a like just beautifully crafted indie movie. It was just I loved it. Loved every moment of it.
Oh, great. And Ricky, you agree with that one? Was consensus
yeah, I loved it. Yeah, I kind of went in not knowing too much about it.
Yeah.
You know, I did know that, you know, it's, and you know this within the first couple minutes of the movie, is he loses his hearing.
Yeah.
And he's a drummer in a metal band. And just the journey throughout is really, it's beautiful. It's really well done in pretty much every way, every perspective that you can think of.
And no spoilers, but for me, it's one that absolutely sticks the landing on the ending. And I think those kinds of movies often have a problem not knowing quite how to end the movie. And I thought it did just a pitch perfect job. Yeah, really
nice.
Really,
oh, that's exciting.
Really stunning film. I absolutely loved it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Oh, well, good.
So that one is on Amazon for anyone who's looking.
Lots of content.
Yeah, we're not running
hours
out of
and hours.
Not running out of content. And when you're done with Justice League, go over to the Macroverse app and read a bunch of really awesome next generation comics.
I'd
say go do that instead of
there
Justice
you go
League,
yeah
much better than that.
There you go, when you're done on Macroverse, yeah, go ahead and watch some Justice League, but very good. All right, well, that has been another episode of the Mythmakers podcast live here on Clubhouse, and we'll be back next week, same time, same place. And I was thinking we might invite on a special guest next week to talk about one of the series that we're working on, so we'll see if we can put that together, but that was my kind of current thinking, so there may be some fun stuff to talk about with a couple other people.
Excellent. Love
awesome.
It.
Looking forward to it.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, guys.
Next time.
All right, guys.
Fun stuff. Have a great
have a good
rest of your evening, and we'll see you later.